Okay, folks, I'm sorry this started a little bit late. I apologize for the delay. I'm Dan Rundy. I hold the Schreyer Chair here at CSIS, and I wanted to give a chance for Dr. Michael Smith, who's joining us, to have a conversation about his 5.5 years in Afghanistan as president of the American University in Afghanistan. I think the American University in Afghanistan is one of the great successes of American engagement in Afghanistan and reflects really the best of what America has to offer to the world. And I think that it's also a credit to USAID. It's a credit to the Department of Defense. It's a credit to the State Department. Funding higher education in the developing world is not something that's easy to do, because much of the assistance that we give to the developing world in education goes to basic education. So it's particularly interesting and important what's happened in Afghanistan through the American University of Afghanistan. I think we're going to hear a little bit from Dr. Michael Smith about his experiences there. But the impact has been dramatic. I think you'll hear about it. I'm in the business. I do this for my day job, and so I hear a lot of important stories. This was important enough when I was at a dinner a couple of months ago. I wrote a personal check. I was so moved by what I saw and what I heard. So Dr. Michael Smith has had a very distinguished career in education. He was an English professor at one point, and then got into the academic management side of the house, and then was in education reform for a while in Philadelphia, and then at one point became president of the American University in Nigeria, and then moved from there to another garden spot and became the president of the American University of Afghanistan. So has been twice you've been an university president, and really has led the American University of Afghanistan through a period of incredible growth, and in partnership with a great board, as well as a group called the Friends of the American University of Afghanistan, have helped fundraise for you, but also with a lot of support from, as I said earlier, AID in particular, and the Department of State and the Department of Defense. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the floor over to you, and just for you to share your experience about what your experience has been like in Afghanistan, what you're seeing there, and what difference the American University is making in Afghanistan. The floor is yours, Dr. Smith.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dan, and thank you all for very much for being here and allowing me to have a chance to say a little bit about the university, but also maybe a little bit about Afghanistan, and hopefully have a chance for some dialogue and your own thoughts as well as my thoughts about it. Let me just, for the benefit of people who may not be familiar with the university, say just a word about how the university got started and what its purpose was. And as a preface to that, let me say that I don't think there's anyone involved with the beginning of the university before I was there as president. This is going back to 2002, 3, 4, and 5. Who wanted to start a university just to start a university. That was not the purpose. And so this was not a university created by people who had ambitions to start a university. It was created by people who had a commitment to Afghanistan and who recognized that one of the ways to make a real difference in the country was to found a university that could have the kind of impact that the American University of Beirut or American University of Cairo has had in their countries and in the regions that they represent. And part of that impetus came from some of the Afghans who had themselves attended the American University of Beirut and then come back and seen what a transformative experience that was, and then went on to leadership positions. Some of them are on the Board of Trustees of the university to this day to continue to shepherd that kind of vision. So just thinking about it in that perspective, because it's not always, I think, how development efforts are targeted, and it may seem a bit unusual, but if you think back to Afghanistan and the incredible turmoil that the country has been through over a 30-plus year period of time of conflict and occupation and terrible terrorist sort of activities and the impact on women, the impact on education in the country. When you had a situation where women could not attend schools, girls were deprived of that opportunity, the whole university system, for all practical purposes, was shut down. Even though at one time, universities like Kabul University were really highly respected universities with very strong programs in engineering and so forth. So all of that was lost and destroyed. And indeed, a generation or two, or really almost three, lost all those opportunities. And so, you know, how and what does that really mean for a country that's then trying to get back on its feet and establish itself? And when you don't have people who've been educated, or not enough people who've really received a good education, who can move into the kinds of leadership positions in the country, in ministries, and in the private sector, I mean, what does it mean to pull all of that away and then expect somehow the country is going to just emerge, even though there's support for change? And as much as it's important that basic education be funded, and indeed the numbers in Afghanistan are extraordinary in terms of the increased enrollment in schools and the increased enrollment especially of girls in schools, as much as that is important, without also coming into higher education itself and tapping into that leadership generation potential that universities have, without that, you don't really have a leadership cadre prepared to move into the country. And I think that was part of the vision, part of what was understood by the Board of Trustees at that time. And we have some board members here, you know, chairman of our board, Fred Berger, and others who were active and involved at that time, and Shamim, Jawad, and later Leslie, when she found out she was actually on the board, and others, who have carried that kind of vision forward. And so as I think back on what's happened with the university, I have this sense of appreciation for the initial vision of going after a very important development gap in a country that is incredibly important internationally and important for the United States, by targeting that with support from USAID and other sources to try to really generate a new cadre of leadership for the country. So I'm very appreciative of that. And then I just could reflect maybe a little bit on some of the things that have happened since my wife and I have been there. Some of this, some of you here around the table are already very familiar with this, but some of you may not be, that there's been so much progress in Afghanistan over this period of time. And of course, what you see in news stories so often is the negative side, the violence, the disruption, the stories that get told about Afghanistan accurately, but tending to focus on those more sensational aspects of the country. But in actual fact, if you're there, if you're living there as we do for 5 years, and to see what's happening in the country, for whatever negative things there may be that get reported, there are so many more positive efforts that you see all around you. And I'm just thinking back, Senator Levin was on our campus for a visit, which he thoroughly enjoyed. I have a feeling he enjoys all of his visits, but he really enjoyed this visit especially. So Senator Levin was on the campus in the fall semester and talked to a group of students and so forth, and even went into the gym and started shooting baskets with some of our students playing basketball. And we do have a women's basketball team, by the way. So he's shooting some baskets and stuff, but he also was commenting to me that this was the 12th visit that he had paid to Afghanistan. But it was the first time he'd driven through Kabul. because his other visits, he'd been going out to military bases and, you know, seeing the troops and so forth, as you would expect, and being chauffeured around from place to place, mostly by air. But this time, to get to our campus on the south side of Kabul, by Dalaman Palace, he had been driven from the embassy right through the middle of Kabul. And he was struck by what he saw on the streets, because there were buildings under construction and shops all over the place and a vibrant economy, not maybe as strong as it needs to be in the future. But he was talking about, you know, what an extraordinary sense of life there was everywhere. And that's what I've seen over the last few years develop more and more, that in many ways the investments that have been made in Afghanistan are investments that have paid off. Not all of them, not everything has been worthwhile. There have been expenditures that could have been more wisely placed. But if you think about the amount of change that's happened, it's been really a remarkable amount of change in the country. Now, there's a corollary to that, of course, and we may want to talk a little bit about this. An investment having been made is not an investment to walk away from too soon. And I think the biggest concern that those of us have who are in Kabul is that there may be a tendency, and I'm not talking about troop levels here, I'm really talking about other kinds of support for development for the country, that if that is not sustained at some reasonable level, if there's a tendency to walk away from the investment that's been made, then a lot of people will suffer, especially women will suffer. It will be one more time from an Afghan perspective in which the United States and allies left when they should have stayed. And investments like the university that have so much potential won't be able to deliver all of what could be delivered on that kind of potential. And in saying this, I'm just thinking back to the sense of hope that I think you feel when you come on the university campus. And I'll just take a minute to share this with you, because as some of you know very well who have had the experience, when you walk on the university campus in Kabul, through the dusty streets and the walls around and all the rest of it, and you come on the campus, you are immediately struck by the extraordinary sense of normalcy in life. And this time of the year, it's green grass, the most beautiful roses you've ever seen in the world, all over the campus. Men and women sitting around in the library, in the cafeteria, out on the grass with their laptop computers open. The campus is wireless. Computer labs, science labs, and functioning. Students playing ball in the gym. You would think for all the world you're in somewhere, a small town in Ohio or somewhere in New England or something like that, on a small college campus. And those are the young people. And of course, we're talking about a country in which 60% of the population is under the age of 20. These are the young people who really are the future of the country. And they're not handpicked because they're elite. In fact, 70% of our students receive scholarships. We have 150 women students who are on full scholarships to attend the university based on need. But they are the future generation of leaders for the country, coming from every province in Afghanistan, women and men. And that's really a story that I think needs to be repeated. We talk about stories being told, and that's a kind of investment and opportunity that needs continuing support. And the university is, just to give you a sense of the scope of the university, 5 years ago, we had, well, we, when we first enrolled students in 2006, there were 53 students and one woman. And two courses were being taught. 5 years ago, we had 300 students, 16% female. Now, if you count everybody, it's 2,000 students. Over 30% of the students are female, and half of the new students coming in are female. And so you have men and women studying together. Curriculum would look just the same to you as what you would see if you're in the United States going to a university. We have an MBA program. We have a new program, master's program in education, which has 320 students enrolled in it. So there's all this hunger for education in Afghanistan. And to give you another little statistic about this that might surprise you, and it's partly a good story and partly a bad story. There are almost 100 private institutions of higher education in Afghanistan now. When the American University of Afghanistan was founded, there was one, just us. The bad part of that story is the quality level at most of those institutions leaves a lot to be desired. But as a testament to the hunger for education, I can't think of anything more remarkable. There's just not enough opportunities available for higher education to meet the demand of people who want to be educated. And that says more than anything else to me about the future of Afghanistan and why I feel so hopeful about the country, recognizing that there are going to be difficulties, rough spots, including what's going on now with elections in Afghanistan. And there'll be bumps in the road, but the young people are the future for the country. The young people want to be educated, and the young people want to stay in the country and want to make a difference in the country. And they hope, desperately hope, that the support for them and the support for the investments that have been made will continue to be there for them and for their children to come also. So I'd be happy to engage in any kind of conversation around this, Dan. Yeah.
So I have just a couple questions for you, then I'll open it up. Could you just talk about the role of AID and what it's meant for the university?
It's been absolutely essential for the university to have that kind of level of support from AID. And we had an initial small grant from USAID that went through the Asia Foundation. We had then a cooperative agreement with USAID for a five-year period of time, and now we have a second cooperative agreement for 5 years. We're just completing the first year of that second five-year cooperative agreement with USAID. There would be no way for this university to exist without the support from USAID. And I know my colleagues at USAID, I know that this was not an easy decision from USAID to provide this level of support for the university, but I think it's been an investment that's really, I know it's appreciated by the students.
Just could you talk about, as you look ahead, and you talked a little bit about the changing face of Afghanistan, there's a sense in Washington that there are a number of things, if you got the political stuff right, a big if, and if you got the security stuff right, a big if, that there are a series of economic opportunities where you could make the case that Afghanistan could stand on its feet without support 5, 7, 10 years from now. Could you just speculate a little bit about what some of those things are, or some of those economic activities that you see, either your students entering certain activities, or talk a little bit about when you talk about, certainly you've got a sense as you talk to look at students and the demand for education, but could you just take a step back and look at sort of the broader context of Afghanistan. So when you make the case to elected officials in the United States or policymakers, when they say, look, please keep doing this. My argument has been, there is gonna be a payoff down the road in addition to peace. There's gonna come a moment where they're actually not gonna need assistance from us, that there's actually hope that Afghanistan is not gonna need aid it needs it now, it needs us for continue, but there is a light at the end of this tunnel. It could be 10 years from now. Could you just talk a little bit about that, or what your reaction is to that statement?
Yeah, I think that's a good observation, and I think that I guess I'd answer it in a couple different ways. I mean, you've all heard before about the wealth that's in the ground in Afghanistan. It's very, very substantial. So there's huge amounts of mineral deposits and oil and gas available in Afghanistan that's not been fully realized yet. And tenders are out, and it's still in an early stage of development. And this is long-term investment. We're not talking about something that's going to turn around and pay dividends in a few years. It's going to be a couple of decades for this to really develop in Afghanistan. But Afghanistan is a country that's blessed by having some substantial wealth in the ground in Afghanistan. In addition, Afghanistan has huge potential in terms of agriculture, and yet the country has never been able to really fully realize that. And so you hear the kind of stories, and they really are true, about products that are grown in Afghanistan, then shipped out of the country, where they're packaged, where the value added comes. And where some other country realizes the benefits, in some cases shipping the final products back into Afghanistan or sort of repurchased back in Afghanistan. So you really haven't had a chance yet in Afghanistan, even though there's some good programs in place supported by Asia Development Bank and also by USAID to support agriculture. You don't yet have a sense that that's had a chance to work its way through, so you don't really have an agribusiness sector that's been fully developed. But Afghanistan is a fertile country that can grow more than just poppies. And being able to develop that sector, I think, is really significant. It's also, when you talk to some of the young Afghans, and I had this experience in my own office, just talking about transportation issues in Afghanistan and the location of Afghanistan along the old Silk Road and the connectivity there between east and west through Afghanistan that existed historically, but also still has that potential for Afghanistan to not be a place to avoid, but instead, as far as a transportation corridor goes, to be a place for goods to pass through, in aviation as well as talking about roads. And in Afghanistan, in the transportation ministry, there's a huge push now around railroads and air transportation, taking the military air bases as they become available now in Afghanistan that were devoted to defense, instead turning them around for commercial purposes, where they could really rival some of the other commercial centers. So that, and this is what the young people talk about, and I'm remembering back to a conversation, a couple of you have heard me say this before, that I had with a young man from the Ministry of Transportation who was sitting in my office about a year ago talking about plans in aviation. I kept looking at him thinking, he looked very familiar to me. He's about 27 years old. And I was kind of looking at him. I said, "You look very familiar to me." He said, "Yeah." He said, "Yeah, I'm. I just graduated from the American University of Afghanistan." "Oh, yeah, that's right." And he has the lead planning position in the transportation ministry now for air transportation. That's his job. So these people who are, you know, creative and bright are right on the verge of the kind of planning that can realize that sort of potential that you're talking about. So those are three areas that I can think of.
Thank you. That's great. There are a lot of thoughtful people here in the audience. I want to call on a couple of people. I want to put Patrick Fine on notice that I want to hear from Patrick. He's a former education officer. You served as mission director at AID in Afghanistan. You're now the CEO of FHI 360. So I think you've had a long-term relationship with Afghanistan, but you also think a lot about education. So love to hear from you, Patrick. And I know this gentleman's got a hand up, but I'd also like to hear from Fred Berger as well, as the chair of the American University of Afghanistan. So Fred, why don't I ask you to speak first, just because I know you're never, like me, you're never at a loss for words. So
thank you very much, Tim.
Yeah.
I hope there'll be a robust conversation here. I hope people challenge some of the premises, both that underlie the university.
Sorry, thank you. Premises that underlie the founding of a university, the creation of a university, and also help us think through perhaps creative ideas on where we might find pots of money as we learn more and more that we are overtaxing the generosity of USAID. particularly in their tertiary income, or their tertiary education program. I'd just like to second a comment that Michael was making about the economy turning around. I reopened our office in Afghanistan in 2002, and that's part of how I became involved with the university. I'd been there once before in 78 when I was when I took my wife there on our honeymoon. Oh, but yeah, I'm that kind of guy. From 2002 to about 2012.
So, and you're still married, right?
She's been putting up with me for 40 years.
Amazing, amazing.
I agree with you completely. The local businessmen, the middle level and lower level businessmen that I knew because we rented houses and were very much involved in the reconstruction, whose families before the troubles in the 70s were involved in manufacture in Afghanistan, would never invest. They would do import-export, they would do trade, they would not invest a nickel in Afghanistan. Around the end of 2012, beginning of 2013, I began to see a sea change. I began to see people actually investing in hard assets in the country, starting to get involved in manufacture again, starting to invest in real estate projects that could develop, starting in places like Mazar-e-Sharif and then into Kabul and so forth. To me, this said volumes because it said, look, I'm not a political scientist, I'm an engineer, but I've been doing development since 1972 all around the world, mostly in Africa. If the locals aren't investing in the country, you got to be worried, and you certainly shouldn't be investing in yourself. But if the locals start reinvesting in their country, and they are doing it overtly, it means that they've looked at all the possible futures. And remember, we're talking 2013 now. They've looked at all the possible futures, and they've decided that they can manage within any of those possible futures. And that's why they're starting to invest rather than waiting until after this election sorts itself out. I think that's a tremendous vote of confidence. And one of our board members, Essam Bayat, who started AWCC, the first wireless, the big wireless company, has been an investor from the beginning, much more foresighted, has been investing in the university because he said, I want you to have a strong information and telecommunications capability at the university because I can't make my business work if I have to keep bringing people from overseas. If I can take 20 kids out of your program, I can pay them more than they would get otherwise, and it's still cheaper than three expats coming in. So it's a great business deal for him to support the education in the country. We're now starting to see this come out in other areas. We've had approaches from the mining and minerals industry saying, why aren't you developing a school of mining management, of extractive materials management? And so we are looking into that. We've had complaints all over from people that I know, that we know in the construction industry, saying, why can't we hire more qualified people to do construction management, construction supervision in Afghanistan? And so Michael has been talking with the Kabul University Engineering Department to combine their engineering training capabilities and their professors with our management professors to create a construction management degree. And I'm just trying to sell this now in the corridors to the Asian Development Bank to see if they'll support it, since the guy claimed that he wants to invest in roads as well as education. It sounds like move him up a notch in his own hierarchy. But let me stop. I there are people here who are curious about what's going on with the university and with Afghanistan, and we should let them speak.
Thanks, Fred. Patrick.
Thanks.
I'll give you the microphone.
Thanks. Well, I just want to say how really heartening it is to hear you, Dr. Smith, talk about your experience and to see the way this institution has evolved, and to congratulate Mrs. Jawad and Fred and other members of the board for the stewardship and the commitment that they've made to realize a dream that in 2003, I can tell you, was had very little support. And when I arrived in Afghanistan, The first assignment that Ambassador Khalilzad gave to me was to figure out a way to get USAID to pay for an idea that they had flatly rejected, and they had gone on record as saying, we're never going to do this. And so it was an uphill battle to convince not just people inside USAID, but there were strong opponents in Congress who were controlling the purse strings, who saw this as just an investment that would have no return. It was just, you know, a wasted pipe dream. And so I just want to congratulate you and say how really encouraging it is to see the institution that's been created. And if there's any example of a high return on education, or I mean high return on investment, it's taking an institution that most people doubted could make a positive contribution or succeed beyond a couple of years, and see that it now has 2,000 students, and know that it's having a profound impact on the lives of those 2,000 students. So, I mean, for me, to hear this story is just a great validation of the value of this kind of support and the value of being willing to take risks and to listen to because the local Afghan community, like Professor Wahab, who was Minister of Education at the time, you know, they believed it. And they knew that it was a viable proposition. And so it's a great affirmation of that, trusting local knowledge, a great return on investment, really validates the value of foreign assistance. And I think, actually, you should have a strong case for continuing the for persuading the U.S. government to stay engaged, because there's probably few investments that have paid off this well. Thanks.
Thank you, Patrick. It's listening to this story was reminding me of why I got into the development business. There's a lot of unhappy things in the business, a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of fights, a lot of personalities, and unhappy, unpleasant stuff. This is such a great story. This is such an it's an inspiring story. It's an inspiring story. Sir.
Oh, well. Dr. Smith, thank you. My name is Dave Snapp, and I just returned from Kabul after nearly 4 years of service to the U.S. government, including 14 months as spokesperson to the U.S. Embassy. And I brought with me today Dr. Hakeem Asher, who's the former director of the Government Media Information Center, who you recognize as one of the leading spokespersons of the Afghan government. Abdul Azizi is a student who's now down in Florida, and my friend Mike Hilleglass is from Corvus Communications. But Dr. Smith, you know, I want to make a side comment, and to everyone here, because I don't know how many people have actually been to the campus. The Women's Center there is probably the most impressive facility that I ever walked into in Afghanistan, not only from a physical standpoint, but also from the mission and the objective standpoint. I congratulate you. Thank you for your leadership, and Leslie and the other board members here who had something to do with that magnificent center. I remember one day that Matt Trevithick called me. He's the director of communications at AUAF. And he said, hey, Dave, in all your dealings with all these international reporters, can you say something positive about the university? Because we're trying to attract attention. And I said, sure, Matt, I'll do it. So the next week, I had a meeting with a very well-known international correspondent who will remain anonymous because I protect my sources. And I said, hey, listen, when is the last time you went out to AUAF? Because there's some phenomenal things going on out there. And I got the inevitable pale of boredom, blank stare in the face kind of thing. And it points out a problem that we all face with this issue. I told Ambassador Cunningham when I left the embassy in May, Ambassador, you will not have the media that you're looking for until our national leadership decides to brag about what has been done in Afghanistan, including AUAF and healthcare, education, women's rights, children's protection, all of these things that have been done and invested by the U.S., you will not have the media follow you in the way that you want until our national leadership decides to do that. And I don't mean the occasional comment from Senator Levin, who I was one of his briefers during that trip, and he loved going out in the city. We've got to have a national dialogue about what we've done right in Afghanistan. And so what I would say to all of you who are very influential people in this room, reach out to everyone you know at the White House and others and say, look, until we start bragging about this, no one's going to know about the investments, including this phenomenal university that has been established there.
Thank you very much, Dr. Smith. Really impressive, and first time in my actually education life here in U.S. Now getting to the second year that I am observing such a wonderful event, and I totally agree with the especially American University in Afghanistan. I was one of the Afghans joined the TOEFL class to qualify myself for applying for my master's degree in a university here in the United States. And I attended the class, went wonderful. And thank you so much again for the leadership and for the efforts. And there are so many friends of mine currently involved doing their BAs and different fields, and also and the MBA program. So I also believe that Afghanistan's future can be guaranteed only for its future leaders. So we are thirsting for education. Afghans, if you go to Kabul, go to Kandahar, go to Badakhshan, any part of Afghanistan, especially the young generation, the Afghans, they are thirsting. They are trying to find a reliable university, a university where there is a quality education. And that is only the American university. And there was the evidence. I had a meeting with General Petraeus, and one of my recommendations was the investment for higher educations in Afghanistan. So we believe that Afghanistan's future actually would be guaranteed with higher education sector and investment, especially in this field. And we also request all the great people here around the table to work for this great idea and help Afghanistan and an Afghanistan's future. Thank you.
Thank you very much for, I think it's working. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to introduce myself. My name is Abdul Hasib Azizi. Friends can call me Azizi. It's just 11 months that I came to United States and St. Petersburg College through a very supportive program which is called Silk Road Leadership. And about the American University, when I was in Afghanistan, I worked with Federal Express as a sales executive, cooperation, and then a site manager, and American University of Afghanistan was my client. And I have been there, I have visited American University in Afghanistan, and most of my contact was with the administrative management. And one thing that I want to point out, unfortunately, Afghanistan is still not in a position to continue without very strong basic. Like, Afghanistan doesn't have a strong basic to move ahead. And the only thing which will help Afghanistan and which gives a very strong structure for future is education. And in this way that American University is going through, I'm very hopeful that another educational sectors, not just a university, even a IT, information technology, or very well-known companies, Google, should go to Afghanistan and to give an opportunity for the Afghanistan generation. And thank you very much.
Please.
Well, it's very encouraging to hear from Patrick Fine and David what you said about Afghanistan and about your acknowledging the achievement of the university, because you've both been around and you realize what it means. And this is so you both can be a great advocate of the American university and the achievements that we have made in the past since 2006. Michael mentioned that when first university started, there was one woman, and now it's more than 30% are women. So this is a major achievement for the university and for Afghan women, and that they were not, in 2001, they were not allowed to leave home, and now 30% of American university students are women, that they are amazing, talented, and when you talk to them and when they speak English, their English are much better than me. And it's amazing to just see how, in the time that they were in the university, how much they achieved. And when you talk with them and their goals for the future and what they see the future and what they want to be. So these are very encouragement. And so this is for sure, we all talked about all the importance of the university and what it will do for Afghanistan and the future of Afghanistan, but the impact it makes for the future of women in Afghanistan is also very important. So you all can be great advocate of American University, and we ask for your continued support for Afghanistan and for higher education and for women. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie, could I hear from you, please? I know, but you, ladies first, and then I'll hear from him.
Thank you.
Happy to, thanks very much. Good to see you, and thanks for your comments and your question. And I think you're identifying something that we would like to continue to develop, and that's the partnerships with other Afghan universities. So I think you're right on target with that. We have a pretty close relationship with certain of the faculties at Kabul University, for example. So with the law faculty, and I'll say a little bit more about the law program in just a second, we have a good cooperative agreement with an arrangement back and forth, and we have some participation from Kabul University law faculty members in our law program at our university. We've also done some things with the English faculty, English language faculty at Kabul University, where there's a natural sort of connection since all of our instruction is in English, and so that's something to build upon. We've had some connections with Herat University, with the IT program at Herat University, but I think there's a lot more that could be done, honestly, with those kinds of partnerships, and that's an area where I think we could reach out more and break through some of what I think initially on the part of some of the Afghan universities was kind of a sense of, wait a minute, where is this other university coming from? Is it taking resources away from what we should be getting, and that sort of thing? But ultimately, education, the more education prospers for everybody, all the ships rise together, and I think that's more and more understood. In terms of American universities, we have a particularly strong partnership with Stanford University School of Law, and our law program, our law school, has been developed in that partnership with Stanford University, and that's an example of that. But we have other partnerships also, very strong with Georgetown University and the U.S. Afghan Women's Council through our women's programs, also with San Diego State University, where we have a joint research program, with Indiana University, where we have a program for English language instruction and ESL at the master's degree level. And we're, continuing to expand that a little bit. There's a little bit of a difficulty, and I'll just comment on this quickly, that in terms of exchange programs, because for most U.S. universities, there's a hesitation about sending U.S. students to Afghanistan, given the security situation in Afghanistan. Otherwise, I think at some point in the future, I hope there'll be a really robust student exchange program, so we have students going in both directions, back and forth. And maybe if I could turn to just some closing remarks, and I'll just do this quickly because I think you all are have your own thoughts, and maybe we can talk a little bit after this formal session is over with if you have some other questions and so forth. I'm just so encouraged by the interest reflected here in Afghanistan and in the American University of Afghanistan. And I want to sort of signal a couple of things in closing remarks. One is that we've talked about the need to get the word out, to keep the support going for the investments in Afghanistan, and we feel that very strongly. Here in Washington, we have an office which is the Friends of the American University of Afghanistan. We have staff members here, and Leslie is chairman of the board of the Friends office. That's a really important focal point for us. It provides a front door in Washington. It provides a way to get communication out to people. It provides a way for us to interact with people in Washington to be able to tell the story better. And for any of you who are interested, who are not already familiar with the Friends office and with the staff members, I just would really encourage you to build that relationship, because I think that's a story that needs to continue to be told, not just about the American University, but about the changes taking place in Afghanistan. The other comment I would make, and this may is something that I say, there are people around this table who've heard me say this before, but it's really genuine. I would love to have you come and visit in Kabul. And when I say that to people, sometimes they look at me like, you got to be kidding, you know. And my wife and I have five children who are old enough at this point, who all think we're totally insane for being in Kabul for 5 years. But it's really, in fact, not the case. And although we might be insane, I'm not saying that's not the case. It's not that the insanity is attributable to being in Kabul or related to that. But if there's ever an opportunity, and some of you do travel back and forth, some of you have been in Afghanistan before or would be going back to Afghanistan or might have an opportunity to come, I think if you had that opportunity to be in Kabul and to walk on the campus and to talk to some of our students and some of the faculty, you would be, as Fred was saying earlier, blown away. So come to Kabul, please, okay?
Thank you very much, Mike.